Welcome to Your Money Story. I am Dawn Thomas, a mother of three, financial advisor by day, and a PhD candidate researching the superannuation experience of Generation Z. This podcast provides a platform for stories which are underrepresented. Everyone's money story is unique. My guests are people who conduct their lives with purpose, authenticity, and are not afraid to be different. They stand out within their industries for being themselves. I hope their journeys inspire you to harness your own gifts and talents. I am a believer in living your truth each day. Let's change how the story ends. In the spirit of reconciliation, I acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea, and community. We pay our respect to their elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. The information discussed in this podcast does not take into account your personal and financial objectives and situation. Before acting on any information discussed here, you should consider its appropriateness, having regard for your objectives, needs, and financial position. Glenn Hare, thank you so much for being part of this episode of Your Money Story.
Station is so long overdue.
Yeah, do you know, I've been wanting to talk to you for so long because I've been admiring you from afar in the way that I absolutely adore the messaging you're putting out. I just want to jump in straight into it because, you know, there's so much to cover. What makes Fox and Hare special?
Great question. So there's a number of things that come to that are really, really front of mind for me. The main one that is the first thing is who we work with. So the business was founded just over 5 years ago to essentially work with a demographic that we believe the advice industry, to be frank, has left behind. If you look at some of the statistics around the advice industry, you know, most financial advisors are in their kind of 40s, 50s, 60s, 80% of financial advisors are men. The average age of an advised client, and this is something that I read in the latest advisor ratings report, is 58. So it's kind of, the industry is very much focused on, let's just call it out, old rich people helping other old rich people. So we launched the business to work with essentially everybody else. So if we think about our specific member base, so our members between the ages of 25 to 45, so we work with a much younger demographic than your traditional advice firm. We're very focused on that demographic. So, you know, we are fortunate that we do get referrals to, you know, the parents of our members, which is lovely. You know, we're very humbled by that. We're not the right firm. We would actually refer those parents onto another advice firm that really understand how to work with that demographic. And delving beyond, you know, delving into that beyond, I guess, the age of who we work with, we also, our member base is really diverse. So diverse in terms of their cultural backgrounds, diverse in terms of gender. So, you know, a lot of our members, probably about 70% of our members are women. Probably about 20% of our member base is part of the rainbow community. So we've always been very focused on making sure that we create a very inclusive and diverse environment. And we've also made a very conscious effort to ensure that we avoid using unnecessary jargon and not approaching any relationship with a member or prospective member with any judgment. And this is something that's really interesting in that, you know, we consistently host focus groups with existing members about, you know, what are we doing well, where can we improve, but also focus groups with our ideal member base. And one of the key themes that came through was around ensuring that that, you know, people don't feel judged based on, you know, their personal circumstances, where they're at financially, personally, when reaching out to us. And the other thing beyond our member base that I think makes us very, very special is our team. I absolutely love the team that I get the privilege of working with day in and day out. And we're a really diverse group of people. And what that enables us to do, you know, that diversity of thought ensures that we're creating an experience for our members that isn't just the one avenue, you know, the one size fits all, or the way that it's always been done. everything that we do and put forward is challenged, and we again get input. Regardless of what role you play within the firm, your voice is heard, listened to, acknowledged, and taken into account. So yeah, who we work with and certainly the team around me.
I know that you've ramped up a lot of the communication with social media. I've noticed it right recently, but I think your messaging has always been there, because I know I got to know more about the business probably about 2019, you know, when I attended my first ever AFA conference. And, you know, it gave me such encouragement to see that happening, because I was, to give you perspective, if you didn't understand the impact of what Fox and Hare were doing, is that I was probably in an environment that's very conservative, you know, hearing really unkind comments about diversity and inclusion on a daily basis. So to go from a physical advice environment where, you know, it was not inclusive in that way, you know, you would hear remarks, you'd be made to feel silly if you said otherwise, a woman of color, and try and speak up on stuff like that, you know, puts a target on your back. But then seeing how Fox and Hare was doing it and you're being loud and proud. I think one of the first posts that I noticed was about marching at Pride. And I'm like, that is so cool. Have you faced backlash or, you know, negativity from people in the profession just not understanding the pathway that you're on?
No. No one's ever kind of specifically said anything, I suppose. And I think about, you know, why that may be. As a general rule, and this is a general comment, most people value authenticity. Whether they agree with what you're saying or what you're not saying or whatever the case may be, one thing that we are very loud and proud about is we are very authentic in our approach. We may not be the right fit for everybody. That is okay, but we're very true to who we are. And that's always been important. And if someone, you know, someone's particular value set doesn't align to our value set, that's okay. We're just potentially not the right fit for them. And that's referencing both, you know, a prospective Fox and Hare member. That's also referencing, you know, a potential, you know, someone wanting to work with Fox and Hare. But to be frank, Dawn, we've had quite the opposite. You know, we've had such amazing support from the industry around, you know, what we are trying to do, which is, to be frank, change the perception of our industry. Change the perception that financial advice is just for old rich people. Like that's something that a big part of our, you know, our tone of voice, our branding, our messaging is really to kind of break down that preconceived notion. And also being really loud and proud about the fact that we value diversity of thought. And that's, again, something that's very, very important. And Fox and Hare wouldn't be where it is today without that.
And it comes through really clearly that you are walking your own path. And that term thought leadership, and that's what it's going to be titled. Immediately when I thought of you, I'm like, you know, that's what it is. It's leadership that you're taking on. Yeah, as in, you know, I guess, when did you realize that you're a leader in this profession?
When did I realize I was a leader in this profession? That's a bit of a challenging one. I suppose, you know, I was really privileged and humbled to win Thought Leader of the Year a couple of years ago, which was a pretty special moment for me personally. But also the team really gathered around that, and we're just super proud about the fact that, you know, as a business, we were and to some extent, I like to think, still leading the profession in this way of thinking. So that was definitely, I guess, a validation point for me. And also just feedback from peers, like, you know, going to conferences, going to PD days, you know, has someone, you know, complete stranger, a complete random coming up to you and saying, hey, I really love what you're doing, or can I pick your brains around this, or have you thought about that? It's really humbling, Dawn. Like I'm always fascinated by the advice community, and I think the sense of community over the last couple of years has gotten quite a lot stronger, which is really, really cool to say and to be a part of.
Yeah, and I think it's probably a testament on how you carry out yourself, right? I don't think that's necessarily going to happen with a lot of support if you're not putting out a lot of positivity into the profession. So everyone kind of appreciates that. You actually understand the power that you have in the position that you have. You know, can you share with us more what you feel that responsibility is to other people that may not hold the same amount of privilege or power?
Definitely recognize that, you know, being a business owner in terms of the direction of the business, a lot of that kind of does sit on my shoulders. But even thinking about the actual values of the business. So Fox & Hare is five years old. So it was co-founded by myself and Jessica Brady, who many on the would know. And the business was created or founded based on our values, our personal values. And what we've seen over that kind of five and a half year period is the values that our business now embraces are those of the collective, which comes with its, you know, challenges, right? Because everyone values different things. Everyone has different, different values, different ethics, things like that. But I'm also very proud of the fact that Fox & Hare is able to embrace, and I'm talking about Fox & Hare as, I guess, as a company, take the collective thought from everybody and almost reinvent or invent its own kind of world to some extent. And in terms of, we have a very flat leadership structure at Fox & Hare, and you know, I'm always very vocal about the fact that the success of the business is not on my shoulders. It's really a collective effort. And if the success of the business is a collective effort, then people need to have equal voices when coming to the table. So we have fairly structured meeting agendas. We have very structured way of providing feedback. We have very structured way, not from just an employee perspective, but feedback in terms of how we can continue to improve the culture, the members' experience, or just the business more broadly. And everyone has an equal voice when it comes to that. And it's a conversation that everyone is very comfortable to come to the table and put their opinion forward, which I'm so, you know, we cannot take for granted. Everyone knows that their opinion and their voice will be heard. And then we as a collective work out from there what is the next right course of action. Like I'm constantly saying to the team, this is not the Glen Hare Show. This is, you know, this Fox & Hare is a culture and is a business of its own. The success is our collective effort. And that's something that I say right from day one, even in the interview process. And for those that are attracted to Fox & Hare and work with us, they're genuinely excited by that.
I work for the Wealth Designers and Troy. Yeah. Troy is essentially our CEO, right? And he's like, he just wants everyone to step up. I think he wants everyone to use their unique talents. And that, I think, causes a different sort of engagement that, you know, advisors have within the process or anyone in the company, because you feel like you are part of the business, even though you may not have ownership in the business, because you're shaping it together. There are also things that are coming through on LinkedIn at the moment that I really enjoy looking at, because I think you're pushing it for other employers that have very traditional structures. That post you did about choosing your own public holidays. Okay. Tell me why you thought that was important and what has been the general feedback you've gotten from the profession around that?
Good question. That particular post did get a lot of interest and traction and question marks and how does this work in practice? And where this came about was it was actually a couple of days in the lead up to Australia Day. Mm-hmm. And Australia Day is a very challenging day. For a number of reasons, you know, in respect of our First Nations, in respect of those that, were here many, many years before, I guess, European settlement. And people have different views on Australia Day. And that they kind of got me thinking around why am I saying, okay, everyone's taking Australia Day off when people might have different views in terms of what that means to them. And then I thought more broadly about other public holidays. And it got me thinking about, Good Friday and Easter Monday. Mm. Yes. That's not relevant for everybody. It's certainly relevant for a number of our team, but it's not relevant for others. So I was like, oh, hang on, why am I... why do they have to take Good Friday off if it means nothing to them? Diwali might be more important, or Chinese or Lunar New Year might be important. So why can't they have those days and that time in the year off instead? So I kind of just took a step back and thought, well, let's just make every public holiday a flexible day. You want to take it off? Great. If you don't want to take it off, you can have a day in lieu and take the time off when it's more relevant or important to you in your personal life. Mm. For me, it just felt like common sense. And I know that might sound a bit silly, but it just felt like the right thing to do. And the team embraced it. For those that wanted to work on Australia Day, great. No problem. For those that wanted to take it off, that's okay as well. It's a personal decision. For those that did work, they can take that time off whenever they want, whether that be extending their trip overseas or taking it off at a more relevant occasion to them.
It was such a powerful post. I think, you know why? From my perspective, it was that you showed that something that was maybe we conceived as impossible, it's actually possible. You say it's common sense, right? But since when you did it and you had that post, it was like, yeah, this is very doable. Like it makes you question really a lot of the structures, before that point.
Yeah.
So have business owners then reached out to you to kind of find out how that would work on practical terms within their businesses in advice?
Yeah, we have had a few. I would suggest that the majority of people that saw the post, though, saw it and said, oh, wow, that sounds like a really cool idea, and then just got on with the day job. And the challenge is, if we're going to reshape not only our industry, our profession, the way that we work, we need to not only acknowledge change but embrace change.
Yes.
Even the way that we work from a office, this whole hybrid working piece, right? Every business is managing this quite differently. So we mandate one office day per month. So not 2 days a week, not 3 days a week, not 1 day per month.
Yeah.
And what this has enabled Dawn is that we now have a team that's based in Melbourne, Canberra, Sydney, New Zealand, Wollongong, like all over. No one in Perth yet. But all over Australia, which has then meant we're getting the most amazing people reaching out to us. And to be honest, I was a little bit concerned about this approach because I was concerned about the culture of the business. I'm so focused on ensuring that our team are a part of a culture that they thrive in, both personally and professionally. But what we've essentially done is on that one day that everybody comes together, it's almost like a full day of, it's like a day of water cooler conversations, right? There's no set agenda. Yeah. Everyone just comes in from wherever they are. It's not a terribly productive day, but it's just a day that everyone catches up. And 3 to 4 weeks rolls around so fast. It feels like, you know, that office day rolls around so, so fast. But we also use that time to, you know, connect on a personal level. And we always tend to do something a bit fun. Like last month, we spent the afternoon sailing. The month before that, we did a candle making and wine tasting class. The month before that, we all went pole dancing. Yeah. Like it's just a day to hang out, and the team have really, really embraced that. Is that the way that we'll work and operate forever? I have no idea, but it's definitely working for us at the moment.
When you show that change is possible, on one level, I think maybe you're letting employees know as well that it can be done differently, even if business owners don't take notice of that. So, you know, maybe, you know, we take those ideas to our workplaces, or we think about where we might go forward. And honestly, when I'm talking to young people, I do tell them to research Fox and Hare and stuff like that, because, you know, you've got young people who don't actually understand the different advice propositions that are available in Australia. It's not one size fits all at all. Like, you know, a lot of them come in and they tell me, I say, why do you want to be an advisor? It's because we want to help people. And I'm just like, no, you've got to narrow down, you know, who you're going to help and how you're going to help them, and understand, and then find the business model that matches up to that, because you go into a firm off the street, you may not get that. You know, for example, I had this conversation. It was very bizarre to me, Glenn, like at one point in my career where I was being called to the office and being told that they wanted to reduce my number of work from home days, which was, I think it was 1 to 2 days, depending on it. And the reasoning they gave me was that it needed to be fair. They were telling me about equality, but they also told me that there was nothing wrong with my deliverables or my activity or anything that I was doing that week. And I think what some business owners get caught up is that they're trying to cater rules to the lowest denominator in the practice, as opposed to trusting the people that they have that are already there. You know, so for me, I was like, no.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I would encourage that, you know, anyone that has any, as an employee, that has any ideas around how to improve culture, you're a part of the culture. You've got to let your voice be heard. And what I mean, and again, this is something that I talk to the team about at Fox and Hare quite regularly. I'm not a mind reader. I don't know everything. I definitely don't. So I really rely on the honest feedback from the team to make sure that we are heading in the right direction. And I'm really proud of the fact that we've built a culture where people can be really honest. Like, oh, have you thought about this? Or come, you know, put ideas on the table. And, you know, some of these ideas and you know, ways that we've approached our culture have also just been, from what I've heard from industry peers, also peers, I guess those outside the industry as well. And I've gone, oh, that's really cool. Why don't we do that? And then taken back to the team, got their feedback, and then like, yep, cool, let's do that. So it is really important to be open and honest and transparent, because those, whether they're business owners, your manager, in a leadership role, like they're not mind readers. You've got to be able to, and hopefully you have a relationship with them where you can provide honest feedback or on, you know, really cool ideas that could potentially improve the way things are being done.
There's the values that you have as people and as business, but there's also a trust for the people that you have in the team. And I think sometimes, like, it sounds like you do put a lot of care into getting the people with the right alignment in traditional workplaces where it can fall over, is that they start trying to create rules so that they can manage people who are having bad behavior, and they don't understand how it's impacting people who are doing the right thing in the business, you know, because that can be demoralizing for people who feel like they are trying their best, but they're getting. Have you ever had that challenge before where maybe there's people from the wrong fit?
Not everyone, I guess, suited to the way that we operate. We do, you know, for those that flourish at Fox and Hare, they're very driven, they're very motivated, they can work in a collective as a team, but also independently. They really, really flourish. For those that I suppose need a bit more handhold being a little bit, not micromanaging is the wrong word, but a bit more oversight, it can be a bit challenging. And that's based on the fact that, you know, Fox & Hare is a very fast-paced business. It may not look like that from the outside, but it is fast. You know, we've grown exponentially over the last 5 years, with the vast majority of that growth being in the last kind of 2 to 3 years, which is incredibly exciting. Yeah. And for those, you know, I just sent out another contract to a new staff member that's joining us in 2 weeks. And even throughout the interview process, there's no point shying away from what we're really good at, but also the challenges that we face. And in a fast-paced environment, there are a lot of challenges, like, you know, in terms of building systems and processes and, you know, the team in terms of, you know, responsibilities and accountabilities. There's a lot of challenges. For those that can embrace those, they flourish. When we've had people that have joined us that have since moved on, they've gotten to a point where they've realized that they're probably looking for a bit more structure and stability. So I asked someone the other day, I was like, after 5 years, are we still a startup or a scale up or are we just another business? I don't actually know the answer to that, but it can be quite full on, which again isn't for everyone, and that's okay. What we've found is for those that didn't quite fit or weren't excited by that opportunity, typically kind of self-selected out.
And that makes sense. Like alignment, I think that's a key. And again, that's why I go back to younger people. They need to really do their research, you know, talk to people. Because, you know, like someone like you and a lot of the leaders in the business wouldn't mind having conversations with young people to just let them know and kind of lead them on to other areas, you know, other people they can speak to. So if there's any young people listening today, you know, please reach out to all these leaders in the profession because they will have time for you. Not, they may not meet you next week, but they will book in some time to help you out.
I'm always open to a chat. Yep. There, you know, everyone's very aware of the number of, you know, the drop in advisors in Australia over the last 3-4 years. That's certainly no secret. I'm very passionate about our industry. I think there's so much opportunity in our industry to also be a force for good. Always happy to kind of demystify what the experience may look like as an advisor.
B Corp's status, you've achieved it, which is a huge thing. You know, why go down that pathway and why was it important for you to achieve that?
Great question. It was a long pathway. So it did take us 1.5 years to be B Corp certified. And for those that aren't completely across what B Corp certification is, it's essentially a certification where we are now legally bound to be a force for good, both socially, have social and the planet front of mind. So it's about making sure that, yes, we're profitable, but we're also making sure that we are a broader force for good. So it looks at everything from the governance, how we support our team, the diversity within our customer base, how we impact, I guess, the environment, and also the work that we do within the community. So B Corps that people may be familiar with, so Patagonia, very well-known B Corp, also Future Super, Bank Australia in financial services, even Ben & Jerry's. Ben & Jerry's and Who Gives a Crap, also B Corps. Yeah. But for us, it was something that we had always wanted to do but had constantly been pushed down the to-do list. And we got to a point probably about 2 years ago where we acknowledged that unless we make this a priority, it's constantly going to get pushed down. And that's a challenge that every business faces based on capacity. It was important to us because we believe that the financial services industry can and should be a force for good. You know, one of our taglines is building wealth doesn't need to cost the earth. Now it's really important because our industry, whether we like it or not, doesn't always get painted with the brightest brush. And we wanted to go down this path to give the broader population, I guess an understanding that, you know, we as a profession are genuinely concerned about what they're also concerned about, how we treat each other, how we counteract the challenges associated with the climate crisis. We embarked on the journey about 2 years ago. It took us 18 months to get certified. So we were officially certified about 6 to 9 months ago, which we definitely celebrated. We had a huge B Corp cake and everything like that. What that's done is a number of things. If I think about it from three perspectives. So B Corp, and the reason why it took so long was not because we were necessarily doing anything bad, but it encouraged us to think about things that we just hadn't thought about before. So, you know, we didn't have a breastfeeding policy. I didn't know that we needed to have a breastfeeding policy. Yep. We now do have one. And that's just, you know, one example. You know, in terms of, you know, training programs and, you know, how we induct new employees, we had some sort of a framework, but B Corp really mandates that you really need to support your staff in that induction process. So, you know, how proactive we are with, you know, positioning ethical investing and things like that. So, we were doing a lot of the doing. We just weren't necessarily, I guess, putting into policy or procedures or documenting it. And with B Corp, the biggest challenge is, you know, we've always believed that we've, you know, hand on heart, we feel like we've always tried to do the right thing. However, that's not good enough to be certified. You need to prove that you're doing the right thing. That was the biggest process. And now that the B Corp framework has really set the backbone of our business strategy. So we now look at those five pillars and then work that they're kind of our new measures of success. Because not only are we looking at the profitability of the business, we're looking at those five pillars: workers, governance, community, customers, and the environment. And in turn, and we've got lead stream leads. So I don't manage all five pillars. We've actually got stream leads that manage each of those individual pillars. And quarterly, we catch up to discuss how we improving on our previous metrics. So we got, you know, 5 out of 10 for this particular metric. How we focus on ensuring that we're improving on that particular benchmark. So it's a big part of the foundation of the business plan. The other two areas, so the other one would be in terms of our member base. So we, you know, a lot of, again, B Corp, we're in Australia and New Zealand, there's now, I think, close to 520 B Corps. Our demographic, who we work with, are very attracted to values-aligned businesses. They value the work that Patagonia does. They value the work that, you know, Future Super is doing. You know, they value the work the Australian Ethical is doing. And there's a lot of research that suggests that, that Gen Z, Gen Y are looking at aligning their, you know, their purchasing power with their values. So that's from a growth perspective. We do get people reach out because of that connection to the B Corp community. And then the third piece would be attracting talent. Again, you know, if there's a young grad who's looking to join a financial advice firm, they're going to be more aligned. As a general comment, there is a trend towards looking for companies that are also values aligned, not just, I guess, remuneration. So it's kind of been threefold, I would suggest.
Inspiring thing that's been done, because we know that financial advisors have probably suffered a bit of change fatigue from everything that's gone through in the profession. But there are businesses that are showing that in spite of that, it is still possible to be doing these other things that are not just related with the changes that we have to deal with in the profession. Thank you for role modeling that. There are a lot of passionate people within the advice industry. What's your advice to our future leaders in the profession?
So one of my favorite quotes is, an idea's power is in its execution. So the reason why I really like this quote and often come back to it is that it's easy to fall into the trap of just doing what's always been done. right? Like that, yep. that is the easier approach. Like, yep, this yep. is the way that we've done it. We'll just keep going down that path. But we as an industry have such an amazing opportunity. So those that are currently within the industry to really shape what the future of this industry looks like. We've gone from something like 26,000 advisors down to 16,000 advisors in the last couple of years. So we have such an opportunity to really set the scene for what the future looks like. Because, you know, there is talk that those numbers are now starting to stabilize and then will inevitably then grow again. So, you know, we're in this really privileged position to really shake up the status quo. So, you know, for those that are, you know, starting out on their journey or have been an advisor for quite some time, I'd really encourage them not to give up on their ideas. You know, shake up the status quo. It's not always easy. Just calling it out, it's not always easy to do something that's potentially never been done before, but it can definitely be worth it.
Oh, outstanding. If I could just clap on this podcast, I would. thank you so much for your time. And thank you for role modeling what change can be.
Thank you so much, Dawn. I really appreciate it. And yeah, chat was definitely long overdue. Let's not keep it too long before the next one.
Subscribe now to be notified of new episodes. Let's change how the story ends. The information discussed in this episode includes strategies that are general in nature, as everyone's situation is different and the information discussed does not take into account your objectives, financial situation or needs. You should always seek personal advice in regards to your own personal circumstances.